Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds, and we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I'm super excited to introduce a new guest that I just found out about, like, I think this week. Like, this is one of the fastest interviews connections I've made, but with somebody who has sheep and is using the wool to do all sorts of cool, green, environmentally friendly things. Not just making yarn. So I think you're all going to be excited to hear my guest today. His name is Thane McKay from the Brookside Woolen Mill. So welcome to the show, Thane.
Thank you.
And do you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm in Malta, Montana up here, and we have a woolen mill. We used to run about 1,200 head of sheep, and decided to change markets a little bit because there hasn't been any decent wool market in the state of Montana since the Second World War. And my wife decided she wanted a woolen mill, and one thing led to another, and we brought 29 semi-loads of machinery home and set up a woolen mill.
29 semi-loads?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff.
I guess. And did I hear you say on the other, I was listening, I found a new podcast, listeners, if you're interested, called Woolful. This young girl, Ashley, is doing that's really neat. And Thane was on that. And did I hear you brought it back from Utah?
We did. It was the old Barron Woolen Mill, which had been in existence down there since late 1800s. It was started by the Mormon Church, and then when the government wouldn't let the church own businesses anymore, they brought in the barons out of Scotland, and they started running the woolen mill, and the last three baron mothers ran it up until the late 80s, and then it went through several hands before we bought it. But when we did buy it, all three baron brothers were alive, and we got a lot of their original patterns and parts and pieces, and really a neat bunch of old gentlemen, a couple of World War II veterans, and were a big help in moving the machinery and setting it up for us.
Wow. Okay. So, so it says that on your website that you guys are semi-retired farmers who farmed about 4,000 acres of grain, which just sounds huge to me. But I always kind of like to start the show off asking about, like, your very first gardening experience. You know, like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? What'd you grow? Who were you with? Like, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, Dad always had a garden when I was fairly young. We kind of got out of it in high school there, but did a lot of shoveling and a lot of weeding, and don't really remember a lot about it. My grandmother always had a great big garden up in Turner there, which is over on the east side of the state here. But she calved, and my aunt still gardens up there. But that's kind of it, you know. I've always had the farming and stuff in the background, kind of a larger scale garden, I guess you could say.
Okay. And so I usually start up by asking, like, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you? But maybe you want to tell us a little bit about, like, your green insulation and your green mill more. Either way.
The organic is difficult because there are so many different definitions and it's very political. Uh-huh. You know, there's some things that one organization will call organic and some things that they won't. All sheep, all wool coming out of Australia and New Zealand's organic, but they don't have to follow the same standards that we do.
Oh.
There's so many different third-party organizations that say this is organic and this isn't organic. There's no standard consensus. I started farming with OCIA, what is it, Organic Crop Improvement Association 25 years ago, and definitions change with political climates and availability and things like that. So organic is a very tricky situation to get into anymore. We are organically certified. We're working with the state of Montana. We'll have our new paperwork and stuff done this spring. We do use organic sheep and organic wool. We use conventional. The problem is there's no difference in the way they're treated on the farm.
Oh.
They're just, if you have to inject it, there's exceptions for vaccines and exceptions for antibiotics. Organic is just kind of a catchy catchword. It's a wonderful thing, but it's just been bastardized by big business so badly in the last 20 years. It's kind of hard to deal with on many levels.
Does it not mean they have to be fed like organic food that isn't treated with pesticides?
Yeah, it's,
no.
It depends on your inspector.
Really?
I mean, what's organic hay? If it comes out of a well when you irrigate your hay, is it organic? If it comes out of an irrigation ditch, is it organic? I mean, does it have to have organic water on it?
Well, I think it means like not being sprayed with like weed killers or some kind of pesticide type.
Okay,
of thing.
But if I'm using water out of the Milk River drainage, or in your case, what are you up around the Yak?
We have our own well. We're like south of town.
Okay. So if you irrigate out of a creek, is it organic? Because the guy above you, there's weed seeds in it. Weeds aren't organic. So if you've got leafy spurge in it, well, it can't be organic, can it? Kind of playing the devil's advocate here. We deal with that a lot. I get a lot of phone calls from back east, people wanting organic wool. And there's just no real definition of it right now.
Well, that is kind of why I put that question in there. I guess to me, and that's kind of why I write organic gardener / earth friendly gardening, because I think it's like people who are, you know, doing as most, you know, as natural as they can be to build the soil around the food that they're feeding their animals, and they're, you know, trying, you know, like certainly we don't buy organic feed for our chickens because I can't afford to buy the organic feed. So I don't consider, like, people have asked me, why don't you sell your eggs? And I'm like, well, they're not organic eggs. So to me, somebody who's, you know, feeding their chickens food that they, you know, grow or that they get that doesn't have the big, process type of chemical, because certainly somebody who's putting, you know, chemicals onto their hay to make sure that it doesn't have any weeds in it, I would consider that not being organic.
Right.
I guess that's the way I would look at it.
I prefer the term green and natural, and they're undefinable.
Okay.
But I, you know, anybody with any conscience that says, yeah, this is natural, we're doing it as natural as we can. You know, that's one thing. If you tell me it's certified organic, that's a political label.
Okay.
You know, it's our inspectors fight it all the time with the state,
really?
The Department of Agriculture. It's a very tricky situation from where I sit. And that's why we go with the green label. You know, we call it Montana Green Insulation, and we are the greenest insulation product available in the world. We have to wash it with a soap. And we use Dawn, which, as you know, is the same thing that they put on the sea creatures and the birds when they're cleaning them up from the oil spill. It's got a 10-day biodegradability, which it runs out into our lined pond. And in 10 days, it's inert. It's basically water again. And we use it for irrigation for the garden. And we've got some irrigated pasture we can run it on. And that's the green thing that we use there, as opposed to the organic label. That's our process. Our scouring train is 120 feet long, and it weighs 105 tons. We had to build the building around it. And the wool goes through there. It gets one bath that's hot, soapy water, and then it goes through three rinses, and then the water is recycled through and then runs out into a holding pit, and then there we put it into another clean pit or into the irrigation system. And the clean pit has got small children in it and cattails and trees and crayfish and frogs and turtles and things like that. So we can, you know, document that. And I believe there's pictures of that on the website too, that you can see our water usage is about as good as it can be.
I like that. So, excellent.
Kind of a natural thing there. Now, that's one of the things that we're trying to do this summer is get a greenhouse system set up with a large, possibly commercial aquaponic and greenhouse system to use wastewater. Possibly put some prawns in it or some tilapia and then do some hydroponic plants just to see what happens.
Nice. I like that. I think people will be interested to see how that comes out. And I haven't heard about a lot of people doing large commercial aquaponics. When I was I just went on this trip over to Paris, and while I was there, there happened to be this big agriculture production, just huge. I mean, thousands of people were there, this like big show. And the first guy I talked to right outside had this really cool aquaponic system set up. He was actually from New Orleans and they were just moving over to France to expand. And it was a really cool system the way they had it. I mean, I just loved it. It was these vertical growing, almost like a metal. It reminded me of, you know, the thing that catches your rainwater, like almost like a metal rain gutter kind of like thing with the plants growing, but it was hanging, you know, vertical. And the way the water recycled and came out of the tube on top was just really cool. So yeah. I think that's going to be a lot of the future, people going that way. And so it's nice to hear that you're going to do that on a conventional scale.
Well, that's what we're dealing with. You saw the growth media that they use. A lot of it is what they call rock wool, which is basically spun fibers, glass fibers, fiberglass.
Really?
What we actually use is sheep wool, because sheep wool is one natural. You're not getting any harmful chemicals off it. It's renewable. You know, every year you shear your sheep. Some people have to shear twice a year. But as sheep wool breaks down, it gives off nitrogen. So you're actually putting a fertilizer into your system by using the sheep's wool as a plant medium. We can make a felted pad that's similar to your growth pads that you get from like Planet Natural and those outfits. We can make that out of sheep wool.
Awesome. So I'm just so curious, like, how you got started. Like, I didn't know. How long have people been making insulation out of wool for years?
Thousands of years.
And is there a lot of wool insulation in the United States right now? Like, what's that market like?
It's a growing market. It's a very specialized market because it is expensive. Wool is a better insulation product. One, it's the only non-carcinogen insulation product on the market. There's nothing in it except sheep wool. We add polybore to it, which keeps out bugs if you're someplace that has bugs down south usually. And then it gives it better fire protection for the federal government. Fortunately, wool cannot burn in our atmosphere. Can't do it. It'll char, but it will not carry a flame. And that's where we're expanding out into the mattress business, because to meet the new mattress regulations, they want to use wool on it, because you can't burn wool. You got a fire, throw a wool blanket on it and walk away and you're going to be in good shape. Have you heard the story about the guy that caught the sheep on fire and it ran off and started the prairie on fire?
No.
It's kind of a modern wives' tale, but it's kind of funny there. It's a big internet thing that was going around about 20 years ago when the internet first started. They were talking about a guy caught a sheep on fire and it ran through the prairie and burned down half the country. It just can't happen. Sheep wool does not burn. So that's the insulation. There's a big advantage there. Sheep wool won't mold.
That's what I was just thinking.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, like, I love, like, wool coats and wool sweaters so much better because they keep you dry, but then they don't, like, you know, it doesn't get wet, or it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't mold.
Well, when wool gets wet, wool's completely saturated, it still has 85% of its insulation quality. So you get a good polar fleece shirt wet, and you're wearing a wet shirt.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But when you've got a good wool coat, exactly like you said, or a good heavy sweater, you're out on the river, throw it on, it's wet, you still contain 85% of the R value. You know, it's the only fiber that does that. And I'll bore you real quick with science. Okay. But wool itself is just like DNA at the microscopic level. It's a double helix. And that has not been able to be recreated in the laboratory. And that's part of the reason that wool has got the insulation and the springiness qualities in the loft that it does. And why it's so comfortable is because you're surrounding yourself with a little bit of wool and a lot of air. It's really a fascinating product, just wool itself. I mean, if you look back through history, the sheep was probably one of the first domestic animals, and somebody decided that they would start to spin it. And when they started making yarn, you could make fabric and blankets and clothing. I mean, basically, the whole start of the civilization as we know it can be based back to wool.
And it's awesome. I mean, I always love wool. And you can make the felt, like people, I've seen beautiful like paintings people have done out of wool felt. And the potential uses are amazing. So tell us more about like mattresses.
Well, what we have is we have a line of machinery, and apparently we are the only ones in the United States that are major production that can make felt pads. And we make a real lofty mattress pad. It's about 3 inches thick. And then they put a cotton covering on it, and then you've got a mattress throw pad you can put over the top of a mattress, or you can actually layer it and build a mattress out of it. But if you go on and you do a lot of studying on the internet, there are some really, really big and comprehensive studies about how much better your body reacts to sleeping on wool. You know, you don't get hot spots. It breathes. It's non-bacterial. You know, you shed an ungodly amount of skin. They figure after you use a mattress for a few years, it's got 100 pounds of skin cells and stuff in it.
Yeah, I've heard things like that.
Yeah. Well, you can pull a wool mattress apart and clean it and reuse it. So they're very, you know, earth-friendly, very green that way. But it's just a lot healthier. You know, wool filters air. Wool will actually take chemicals like hydrogen sulfide and formaldehyde, which are your basic greenhouse gases that are exuded in your house. And because of the double helix, they will actually break it down and absorb it. So it basically purifies your air. And these are all studies that have been done by land-grant universities. Texas A&M is a real good one there. Montana State has one of the three wool laboratories left in the U.S., and it's down at Bozeman. They've got a new director there, and the sheep industry there at the university has a new guy this year, a new doctor that's in charge of it. But you can verify all this through them. You said you got some sheep this year?
Yeah, we got 4 Shetland sheep.
Oh, outstanding. Little furry guys.
Yeah, 2 brown and 2 black.
Okay, beautiful. Now, do you spin?
No.
You should start.
Okay.
Everybody should spin. That's my personal opinion. I'm kind of like Gandhi that way. He took over India in the government on the condition that everybody in the legislature used a spinning wheel for an hour a day to relax.
I could see that. I used to weave.
There you go.
I could see me spinning.
Very relaxing. I can fall asleep running a spinning wheel. I look funny doing it, but I can fall asleep.
Yeah, I could see that being meditative and just... We didn't really get the sheep for the wool. We got the sheep for the manure, first off, and just... and also to eat some weeds.
Right.
Hoping they're going to eat. We got some spotted knapweed we're hoping they're going to eat.
They will. You'll have to force them onto it for a little while. Maybe put them in a little pen and get them used to it. Way better in the spring because, as you know, knapweed gets real bitter in the fall.
Yeah.
But they will actually eat it. Just be, if you get a chance, when you put them in, when it starts to cure out, put a blanket on them. It'll keep your wool a lot cleaner because knapweed are terrible, nasty in wool.
Okay.
But you should probably get 15, 20 pounds off of each of your sheep for wool every year. Their Shetlands are a very, very nice quality wool. It's a coarse wool, but it's got a lot of hand spinning qualities. Makes really nice sweaters and blankets if you're a knitter.
Yeah, I thought it would have to. Because Shetland sweaters are really nice, I guess, was my theory. Mm-hmm. I've, you know, bought a lot of Shetland sweaters. So, speaking of our sheep, like, so you have 1,200 sheep?
Not anymore. We used to.
Now you're just processing it? You don't even have sheep? You're just getting wool from other people?
Yeah. Yeah, we go through so much wool. This year, we're looking at going through about 200,000 pounds of wool.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're, you know, each sheep, let's say conventional sheep, we can get 5 pounds of usable wool out. Over the course of the next couple of years, I'd like to be processing about 500,000 pounds a year. So the total clip in the state of Montana is about 1.5 million pounds yearly.
Wow. Okay. So what about, like, so I was just talking to this friend of mine about because the sheep shearer guy, I guess, is coming to our community this weekend. And so she was asking me, do we want to bring our sheep over to her house when they're there? And I was saying, I was worried that, you know, the girls are pregnant. I'm hoping they're pregnant anyway, I think. Like, do you have to worry about that when they're pregnant? Or, like, you know, is there anything we should do for them? Or
nope, a sheep is a sheep. Your shearer, if he's a good shearer, there will be no damage. Have you ever seen him shear sheep?
No. I know it's nothing. I'm like not the animal girl. My husband was born on a ranch, but I'm out of New York.
Well, there's a lot of sheep in New York. Matter of fact, we got some wool from there a couple of weeks ago, and I'm shipping insulation to there tomorrow.
Really?
Yep.
Awesome.
But getting back to shearing. Shearing is, there's a school that the university puts on there through the wool lab. It's almost a dance. A good sheep shearer can shear a sheep in about a minute and do no damage whatsoever. They kind of spin them around on their butt. The sheep changes position, the shearer changes position, and in 60 to 90 seconds later, a naked sheep runs out, and they're just fine. Now, they can, if they're close, jostling them around like that, they might go ahead and lamb. If they do, they're going to lamb anyway because they're not getting any damage to them. You know, it's just like a gal that is, say she's 8 months pregnant, and she goes there for a ride on a bumpy road. Not a big deal. It's safe. It's humane. It's actually better for the sheep than non-shearing them.
Right.
It's fun. You know, it's a community event. When we sheared, we'd bring in, you know, 25, 30 people. My wife would cook for them, which probably wasn't real fun for her. But, you know, it's a community thing. You sit around afterwards and, you know, sheep shearers are kind of like horse traders. You kind of got to take what they say with a grain of salt when they're done shearing. Great guy. Anybody willing to bend over and shear sheep all day, you know, you got to be nice to them. But it's enjoyable. You'll enjoy it and you'll enjoy watching it. It's a true science doing it. To be a good sheep shearer, you have to shear about 1,000 head of sheep.
So funny. That's what she said they told her. And she's like, I'm never good. Because she's going to the sheep shearing school in Bozeman. She was hoping they were going to come after, but they're not because it's at the end of this month. And we said, you know, we were hoping she would just come shear our sheep. So she said, well, they say it takes 1,000 sheep. And I said, well, here's 4 you can start on. Got to start somewhere if you want to. But really, 1,000 sheep, huh?
Well, it's all repetition and footwork. You know, you do it the same way every time. And sometimes the sheep will fight you. 90% of the time, they just sit there and let you take the wool off them and walk away with a smile. But sometimes you'll get a sheep that's just ornery and they kick and fight. And there have been several times when the sheep and I are both laying on the ground shearing.
Well, I can imagine our ram could be like that. He's pretty ornery. I worry about him just butting our girls when we go down to feed them. He gets a little...
They can be a little aggressive. You do have a Shetland lamb or a Shetland ram?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just make sure that you don't spoil him. You know, if he ever takes you, hit him between the horns with a stick. You need to show him that you're in charge because they can hit you hard enough to break a leg.
I bet. He just like barely butted me one day and I had a huge black and blue mark.
They can be very dangerous.
Surprised.
You know, you need to let him know that he's a sheep and you're a person. And by God, you're in charge. And if he doesn't like it, you've got dogs that'll eat him.
Yep.
But just make sure you don't get hurt. The biggest problem you have working sheep is they jump. And many, many times somebody stepped in front of a sheep and they jump up and hit them in the face, break their glasses, and break their nose. Oh. You know, that's just how sheep get away. A Shetland sheep can jump 3 foot in the air.
Really?
You know, you watch, when they get, especially you watch them when the lambs are out. Those lambs will be 4 or 5 days old, and they'll be jumping around like little springs. They're just fun.
Yeah, and you know, I read a book about Shetland sheep, and it was talking about how, you know, their only real way to protect themselves is basically by running away or the ram. And so, you know, they're in a pen, and so they don't know. And then also it said something about like their line of vision isn't very good. And so I'm not mad at the, I was kind of like, oh my goodness, who are these animals? But then I'm kind of getting more used to him and realizing that, you know, he's just doing his thing. Like, he wasn't mad at me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, you're a predator.
Yeah.
And that's how he sees you. The minute you put the feed bucket down, you're fair game. And as he gets a little friskier in the breeding season, you just got to pay attention. And like I say, you've watched bighorn sheep on TV, I imagine, butt heads, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're hitting with thousands and thousands of pounds of pressure. Well, he'll do the same thing. And if he does it to you, you're not equipped to take that. So you need to know, let him know up front that if he gets aggressive, you're going to smack him. Because it's a safety thing. And we've had people come out and, oh, pet the little sheep. And that's all fine and dandy. But if that sheep gets aggressive and you quit petting him and he hits you, you know, 110-pound sheep at 20 miles an hour with his head is like getting hit with a club. They can do some serious damage.
I bet. Because, like, I was surprised because he was just like, I was getting the bucket to put the food in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, here I'm standing here with your food about to give you some nice, yummy molasses oats. And what are you doing? I just don't go in their pen anymore. I just hand it through the fence.
You know, just make sure you're comfortable with them. If you get some bub lambs, now your sheep should probably triple it up because that's pretty common with Shetlands. We used to run about 200-300 Shetland and Navajo churros, so I've been around them a bit. But you'll want to bottle them if you need to. You know, if there's two that are the same size and one that's an odd size, pull the odd-sized one off. If there's two big ones and a little one, there are two little ones and a big one, pull the odd size off if you have to bottle feed one.
Okay.
And a bottle bum is a wonderment of God himself. They will wander around and put their nose in your pocket, and they will follow you in the house. They're like a cat. They'll follow you into the bathroom if you let them.
Aww.
Then they get to be 150 pounds, and they try to follow you around, and that's a whole different story.
Okay.
But they're fun. You'll enjoy them. You know, baby lambs, there's very few things cuter than baby lambs. Baby goats are probably cuter. But they're all enjoyable. But congratulations on becoming a sheep owner. That's a good thing. We need more of them in Montana.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Oh, Good to know. So what if listeners are, let's see, what would listeners want to know about this then? We've been feeding them hay and alfalfa and then the oats, and then they have some kind of like mineral supplement thing.
Little salt or something.
Yeah. What else would people want to know, maybe?
Basically, you know, if the sheep can get out and graze, they're going to graze what they need. You know, most animals are that way. Shetland sheep are classified as a primitive breed, and they taste way better than a conventional lamb, in my opinion, because they're not. They just do. They just seem to taste a little better to me. But, you know, if you've got a little pasture for them to graze on and you've got good water, keep a little salt in front of them all the time. You know, they'll take what they need when they need it. Keep them vaccinated. You will want to hit your babies with a Clostridium C and D shot within a day of birth.
Really?
DSD, I told you in the email, dead sheep disease.
Yeah.
It's, nobody knows what it is. Sheep just die. You know, they say the only thing dumber than one sheep is 100 head of sheep, and there's something to that. But when you have your lambs, hit them with a C&D shot. because they will get Clostridium and they will die. And there's nothing more crushing than having a small child that's got a baby lamb that dies because you could have prevented it for a 30-cent shot. And, you know, that's one of the things we go around with the organic. If they're going to fight you, if you want to go organic, go to the vet and say, hey, I need a prescription for a C&D shot because you don't want your animals to die. Are you going to take the tails off of them? Or are you going to leave them long-tailed?
I don't know. I imagine we'll leave them long-tailed. I can't. Why would you take the tails off of them? So they're cleaner?
They are cleaner. The big thing, and we don't have a real problem with it over here where we're dry, but if you're wet and you guys get a little more moisture up there, what will happen is as they defecate, the feces will get caught in that tail around the hind end and on the tail itself and the hair, and they will get maggots. And nobody wants maggots in the ass of their sheep.
No.
That's a bad thing. Yeah. It's a little cleaner. It's kind of a personal choice. All commercial flocks do it because of the sanitation issues. The sheep's tail really doesn't do much for them because they've got the wool. Flies aren't bad, except maybe on their faces sometimes. If you do, make sure you dock them long. You want to make sure it's about 3 inches down so the flooper, which is the breeding portion of the sheep, that's not actually a technical term, but it keeps me from getting in trouble for saying bad things on the radio.
Okay.
But you keep it covered, you know, and I would just go down to your farm supply store and get yourself a little green bag of little green Cheerios and do the same thing with the testicles. Make sure you get both of them in the sack and trim them off. You don't want a bunch of rams running around. That's how accidents happen and people get hurt. You kind of keep their mind on being a sheep instead of getting in places they shouldn't be. And this is my personal opinion. Don't take it too serious.
Okay.
But the little green Cheerio, and anybody that's done it can show you how to do it. Talk to your vet. There's a lot of people up there. They've got little bands of sheep, and they'll all be glad to help you. Your extension agent there in the county will be good help for you.
Okay. Cool.
But, yeah, you're in good shape, and then, you know, just watch them. If they're not acting right, you want to jump on them with an antibiotic pretty quick. Just penicillin. Check their eyelids. A lot of times a sheep will be born with an inverted eyelid. Primitive breeds we've never had problems with. But there's a couple of ways to fix that. If you don't, they will lose their eye. And what an inverted eyelid is the eyelid is just born up. When they're born, it's upside down. And it's just a muscle thing. It can be treated with an injection of saline solution or penicillin, or you can cut a little strip out from under the eye, and that will straighten it out. I mean, just a tiny little strip, but the scar tissue will straighten the eyelid out, and they'll be fine. But if you don't, they'll lose their eye. Watch them for runny noses. If they're laying down listless, you know, just don't look right. They're coming down with something. And when sheep catch a cold, they don't kick it off very easy. They usually just die. So you kind of want to watch for them.
Okay.
But I would imagine there's books out there. I know the university has got a couple of textbooks they use on sheep. The American Sheep Industry out of Colorado has some really nice guide books on it.
Okay.
If you're into that. And there's all sorts of forums on Facebook and elsewhere where you can get advice from some people. Some people you probably don't want to take advice from, but that could be like me.
Okay. Well, awesome. Wow, I had no idea. I've never really had, I'm not the, like I said, I'm not even barely the gardener. I grow some flowers and do a little bit of this stuff, and my husband's really he's the big gardener. And like I said, he grew up on a ranch, although I don't think they ever had sheep. They had cows. I don't know. He might have. They've had all sorts of animals, it seems like he's had throughout his life. Okay. Well, anything else you want to share with listeners? How about like any business advice? Like I always like to ask people, if somebody wanted to get into a business,
Like a woolen mill specifically?
Yeah, or even like how many sheep would be the minimum somebody would have if they wanted to sell some wool to you, or if they were going to, I don't know. I know nothing about any of this.
We like to run big batches of wool through.
Okay.
What is there in the state now? There's three little woolen mills in the state. Well, positive four. Two of them are for sale, and they want us to buy them just because of volume. The two little mills in the state that are running on a good year will use between 4,000 to 10,000 pounds of wool. We can process 1,000 pounds of wool an hour. So the big thing with that is scale. Most of them charge $3 to $4 a pound to scour wool. Depending on the load, we're usually $1 a pound or less, because just we can wash a lot at a time, so it's cheaper for us. We don't, you know, if you have like your four fleeces, I couldn't wash them separately; they would get lost in our machine. We try to do a 400 to 1,000 pound minimum run. A commercial wool sack is about a 400-pound bag of wool, and you'll see those if you go to the shearing this year. That's kind of where we want to be when we process. We are at the point now with our business that if it's got two ends, we can use it for wool. Poor quality wool, we grind up for insulation. Higher quality wool can go into the mattress pads and the felt for the reclamation pads. We're doing some stuff with the Department of Transportation on roadbeds. We've got some wool mats on golf courses on test. We're doing some work with an engineering firm to start revegetating the Anaconda Copper Company Superfund site.
Nice.
Yeah, it's wool, when it deteriorates, it gives off nitrogen. So it's a great growth medium. You've got a yard, instead of hydro seeding, you can take some of these 1/8-inch thick wool pads that we make, sprinkle your grass down, cover it up. You retain an ungodly amount of moisture because the wool will hold the moisture. So your seed beds stay nice. It throws shade on the seed till it gets established. And then you've got a mat that the roots grow into. And over the course of 5 or 6 years, the mat will start to deteriorate. And as it deteriorates, it puts off, you know, 8 to 9% nitrogen. So your grass is being fertilized. So consequently, you don't have to come in and spray fertilizer on it for a yard, which is, you know, kind of nice. Nobody wants your dogs running around in a yard that's got fresh fertilizer on it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I think I've learned from my podcast is how toxic the chemicals people put on their lawns are.
Lawn chemicals can be bad. You know, straight Roundup, you know what Roundup is, glyphosate?
Yeah.
Safest chemical known to man. It touches anything other than a plant it's going to kill, it's inert. You could take 1,000 gallons of it, run it out in the garden, and it'll kill everything green. The minute it hits the dirt, it becomes inert. There's other plants out there, or other chemicals like curtail. Sometimes you shake it at a cottonwood tree just driving by in a pickup, and it seems like it'll kill the cottonwood tree. So there's very dangerous chemicals out there, and there's very safe chemicals. And, you know, it's kind of like GMOs. There isn't an organism on the planet that hasn't been genetically modified in some way. You know, your Shetland sheep are GMO sheep. They've been bred with something else to get a Shetland sheep over the years. So, you know, again, we're back into politics and catchwords there, and I won't bore you with my opinion, but like I say, there are some chemicals that are ungodly terrible and some chemicals that aren't quite so bad. You just got to kind of read the labels on them and see what they are and whether you can utilize them or not. And I know that goes against the organic thing, but there's some different things that go on in the world that organic doesn't really cover.
Okay. I like the idea of the woolen grass pad, and that it's putting mm-hmm. the nitrogen back into the soil. That sounds promising. I guess I'm picturing, like, you know how you get like that paper that has like the seeds in it, and you put the paper in the ground and it grows? I'm picturing like wool mats like that. What about insulation? Like, what do they use the insulation for? Like in your house, or is it for something else, or just like you put in your walls?
Yep, you can blow it in your wall. We do a lot of attics. We've been doing a lot of tiny houses because we're only about 300 miles from the Bakken oil field. We do a lot of the little houses and things like that. And lately, we've been doing a lot of buses. People are taking school buses and converting them into RVs, and they are using sheep wool to insulate them with.
Nice.
Yeah. We had a little gal out of Livingston that came and got a load of insulation for a tiny house she was building, and she has a friend that's going to winter in a teepee, and they are going to come up and get insulation for that. And she's building an old-style Prairie Indian teepee, and she's going to double layer it and put sheep wool in it as an insulation. So it's conventional insulation. A foot of that is about an R38, and a foot of sheep's wool is an R50. And of course, it's a non-carcinogen and filters air and does things like that. You don't have to wear safety gear when you install it because it doesn't itch. And, you know, it won't get in your lungs. It won't give you cystic fibrosis or anything bad. So they're using a lot of that. And like you say, on the mats, we've been experimenting with an actual native seed mat that we put the seed on, and we're not sure how to tack it in there. We've been looking at using a honey or a corn syrup as a glue to put the seeds right on the wool, and then you just roll it down your yard and throw a little water to it, and it grows. And having the honey or the corn syrup will actually attract bees. So they will come in, and, you know, everybody needs honeybees around. Very important. So there's some advantages to that, too. We're hoping to have something like that ready next year. That's kind of this winter's project.
I like that. I was just thinking, this friend of mine, when Mike and I first got married way back 20-something years ago, had a teepee, and she would like line it with all the dried herbs in her house, and she put this big huge bed in it, and it was like the nicest guest room I ever stayed in. It was just really nice. So that sounds awesome to put in, to have an insulated teepee.
I say, they do a lot of homes. We've shipped a lot of wool out. A lot of people that have kids with asthma are using it because it actually filters the air. And people with allergies, we have a lot of people that have, you know, just allergens of some sort, and wool will actually help that. With this felting machine, we've had a request from several businesses around that want us to build air filters for their furnace systems out of them, because it's of the excess filtering that wool will do that a regular polyester filter can't. So we've been looking into that. And then coming in with the water that we use, we do run it through a wool filter. I've got buckets that have got filtered, you know, basically stuffed with wool. And we run the water through them, and it pulls out any excess impurities out of the water. But there's
awesome.
You can do all sorts of stuff with wool.
Yeah, you're full of all sorts of great information. I think you're going to really inspire listeners to kind of look into different things, like maybe that they've never thought of or heard of, or just all sorts of different options out there. I just love a lot of this because, you know, I'm always up for any kind of like natural solution to something that we're using that's going to make things healthier. And kids' health, you know, with asthma is a tough one. When you have a kid with asthma, you know, I know those parents. It's not easy.
Well, and that's, you know, if you can do anything that'll help out a kid. And like you say, you've got four sheep right there. And, you know, you can make your own felt. Take your wool once it's sheared. You've got to wash it. You need to wash wool at 120 degrees to melt the lanolin. Primitive breeds like Shetland and Navajo don't have a lot of lanolin, but there is some in it. If you really want to get back to nature, take your bathtub, fill it up with your wool and fill it with as hot a water as you can get, and then let it cool down, and the lanolin will float to the surface. And you might have 2 or 3 ounces of lanolin if you want to make your own soap or hand lotions or whatever.
Really?
You know,
cool.
If
I have a friend who makes soap. She might like that.
My wife makes goat milk soap. She has for many, many years, and We are starting to recover some of the lanolin. We've just been flushing it out before, and it turns into a slurry. But we've got a couple of lotion makers there that are starting to use it, want to use our lanolin, because it's, like I say, we run the organic wool, and we get technically organic lanolin out of it. So we do. There's a couple of companies in the state here that are starting to use it, and we'll start boxing it up or putting it in buckets here this summer.
How many sheep do you have again?
You can do that. Say again?
How many sheep do you have?
I honestly don't know. We don't have very many. There's probably only 40 or 50 out there.
Only 50. Okay.
Yeah. We're not running hardly anything anymore. We've got some on shares and things like that. But you can do all sorts of stuff with your wool, you know. Like I say, get it in the bathtub, get it clean. You can felt it. Throw a little soapy water in there and stomp it around. You make dryer balls, throw them in with your washing machine or in your dryer there, and it will keep static out and make your laundry a little nicer, I guess. I don't use them, but my wife does the laundry, and I don't know what she does. It's kind of magic.
Nice.
But, you want a nice mat on your bath mat, make your own felt. You get out of the shower, you'll walk on it. Feels nice under your feet.
Ooh, that will be a great Christmas present.
Cool. Yeah. Get yourself a little needle felt kit. One year we had a bunch of kids that made Christmas tree ornaments, and they took cookie cutters and they filled them up with wool and they needle felted them. Ooh. And they had little, they took them down to the senior center. But they go ahead and they just keep poking them with a needle until you take an inch and a half of felt and you get it down to about 3/8 of an inch, and you made candy canes and snowmen and all sorts of stuff out of wool. If you look on that Pinterest, you do that on the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, just look up wool felting projects, and there's all sorts of stuff that you can do with your own wool. Because for you with your four fleeces, it doesn't make sense for you to send it out and have it processed. You can do it yourself in the weekend, you know, in an afternoon. And there's all sorts of natural dyes you can use for dyeing your wool, onion skins, and there's a lot of plants, you know, native plants that you can get a hold of. And if you get some good white fleeces, you can dye your wool different colors if you want to make your yarn.
Can we have a white baby from these brown sheep? Or we have to get a white sheep down though. I think we're going to trade our ram off for a different ram event after the spring, if we can. But is it possible to get a white baby from these brown rams? Oh.
Well, like I say, you can get about any color you want out of sheep. You know, you can, your sheep there, if you decide you want to go in and get some crossbred lambs, if you get a conventional ram and come and breed your sheep, you'll get some really pretty and nice silky fleeces out of them. Oh. That F1 generation crop is always a good, you know, you got a lot of hybrid vigor, and you'll get some really interesting fleeces out of them, especially if you decide to take up spinning and then go into weaving again.
Okay. Yeah, I think I would like that. I always liked weaving before, and I think, well, I like the felting thing. I haven't ever tried felting, but I love the things that I've seen. And I have a good friend. She said she'd take all the felt that we can give her. She's totally pretty excited. So, yeah. All right. Well, anything else you want to share with us? Want to tell people anything else about the Montana Green Insulation or anything?
You know, I guess we have a website that, www.montanagreeninsulation, and I'm sure visit with anybody if they've got questions. We do get a lot of people that call and, you know, just don't have enough wool for us to run, and we would sure, you know, like to help them if they want information on the best way to wash your wool in their situation or what to do with it. We are trying to work with our wool pools in the state to develop a line of Montana-made products. Eventually, we'd like to get a big spinning frame and make yarn, and then possibly knitted socks and sweaters and baseball or caps. And it would be really nice if the, you know, Montana wool growers would get together and say, hey, we want our own brand that's kind of what our push is going to be over the next 5 years. And on that way, people with small amounts of sheep like yourself could get together and, you know, say, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to pool our sheep now, and we're going to send it up and have it processed, and we're going to sell wool products that we made out of Montana fleeces, and kind of start our own brand or a company or something like that, even a co-op. We've had a lot of interest in that. So anybody that's interested in sheep, get a hold of your extension agent. Montana State University Extension System has got a wonderful sheep program and a great sheep guy in the wool lab down there. Call them with questions. Call me with questions. We're pretty much, there's all sorts of people available. There's a lot of spinning and weaving guilds around in the state. There's an organization called MAWS, M-A-W-S, Spinning and Weaving. Eureka has a huge fiber gathering if you want to learn more about fibers there.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, we used to go up to that one. It's really impressive.
It's right around the quilt show too, right? Isn't it the same weekend as the quilt? It's like the same weekend as the quilt show, I think, now.
It is. It's part of it.
Which is amazing.
They used to bring up the Navajo Indians, and I don't know that they still do, but they would do spinning and weaving demonstrations there of Navajo, and then they'd have an auction. And it's just amazing the things they can do. They used to do a hand shearing class where they actually use the old hand shears, not the clippers.
Oh.
Real educational. Everybody in the wool industry is, you know, willing to talk to you. You got questions, go down to the co-op and find your local old guy in there. Pretty much every ranch in the state of Montana was founded on sheep. There's very few that weren't. Montana's a big sheep state. So I guess just, I don't know, sheep are cool. I guess that's the bottom line.
Cool. I like that. Okay. You know, did you read my final question? Do you have an answer ready for my final question? It might be a little too political for you.
Ready
to hear it? Okay. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Oh, top of my head, our biggest problem we have right now is overpopulation in concrete and asphalt. We don't have an equal distribution of food resources. Part of that is, 90% of that is political. We do have the capability of feeding the world on the ground that's in production now. The biggest problem we have is the best farm ground in the world is habitated by cities. Look in the state of Montana, the biggest cities
that
don't settle. Asphalt, anytime you put asphalt on the ground, every time rain gets on it, it runs chemicals off. And it runs bad chemicals. That's where we jump back real quick to how can open water be organic when there's runoff on the highway? The Kootenai River, water off the highway runs into it. How could that be organic? I guess local CSAs, we're working on starting one here. Anytime you can raise anything to help feed yourself or a food bank or somebody else, it's a wonderful thing. Don't overbuild. Don't put in pavement. Don't pave your driveway. My personal thoughts. I guess anything that will help another person is a good organization to be involved in. Don't take anybody else's organization too seriously. But I don't know if that answered your question. But
those were awesome answers. You've been just a wonderful guest, like full of just, you know, great knowledge and concrete, you know, ideas, not to do a pun on words, but just, you know, really good. What do I want to say? You know, just like practical knowledge, stuff like I didn't know. So I'm sure there's other listeners out there that don't know things, and just lots of really good answers. And you know, in the online business, people are always talking about it. And even like Stephen King talks about it, you know, your ideal reader, your ideal listener, your avatar, they call them these days, is like, and so, no, I think my avatars or my audience or my listeners will really like all those answers. I think that's kind of what we have in common. And what we'd like to see is that we do believe that there is enough food and it's getting it around. And certainly Kalispell is just, I still like every time I go down there, I'm just like, oh my goodness, they're building more houses on this incredible, rich, fertile farmland. You know, the nicest parts of Kalispell, they're just, that whole new development they're doing just south of where they just put in the new Cabela's. And now they're doing a whole nother, just all that farmland there. So that was a perfect answer. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us today, Thane.
Absolutely. And then one more quick note. If anybody ever shows up here, there's always coffee. There's usually beer and hard liquor. And we'll do tours. And, you know, we always try to have made in Montana beer and made in Montana liquor here. So anybody gets bored and wants to whistle up to Malta, Montana, we're sure here.
Excellent. I've been to Malta.
I'm sorry?
I said, I've been to Malta. I went for a job interview way up on the German Hutterite colony when I first graduated college. Yeah.
Oh.
Elementary school.
East Malta colony?
I guess. It was a long time ago. You know, I graduated in 2003, so I just remember driving out there, and there was a baseball game, and then we went up to the colony, and I met the, you know, the kids and the parents and the elders, and but I wanted to be closer to home. That's a long ways from here.
Yeah, we're not nowhere, but you can see it from the hill.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Shane. You have a great afternoon. I hope it's sunny there. It's sure sunny and nice here.
Outstanding. Thank you very much. And you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.